Today on the 21st Show, have you noticed that people seem angrier these last few years? According to a recent Mood of the Nation survey from the McCourtney Institute for Democracy, 9 in 10 Americans across the political spectrum say a recent political or news event got their blood boiling. We'll talk about why we're living in uniquely angry times and what we might do to manage it. I'm Brian Mackey, and that's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Normal, WNIJ in Rockford-DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news from NPR.
From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Does it seem like people are a little more angry lately? Maybe you've noticed drivers are getting more aggressive, or people are more impatient in the checkout line. It's not just the public, though, but also our public officials. Remember during a Senate hearing when Oklahoma Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullen challenged the head of the Teamsters Union to a cage match?
But the last one said, quit the tough guy act and these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, any time, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be 2 consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, hold, stop it.
Is that your solution? Every poll.
No, sit down.
Oh,
no, sit down. Okay. You know, you're a United States Senator.
If it seems like the mood of the nation right now is angry, there is some data to back that up. According to the Mood of the Nation survey from American Public Media and the McCourtney Institute for Democracy, 9 in 10 Americans can name a recent news event or something about our country's politics that made them mad. And when it comes to road rage, about half of Americans report others are driving more dangerously since the pandemic. The number of deadly road rage incidents that involve firearms has gone up too. That's according to the Pew Research Center. So today on the show, are we living in an age of anger? What's contributing to it? And what's all this anger doing to us? This is a conversation we first aired in February, and joining us for it was Dr. Teresa Mock. She's a clinical psychologist who's been providing therapy to patients for more than 30 years. Also with us was Tim O'Leary, the author of several fiction books, including Dick Cheney Shot Me in the Face, Men Behaving Badly, and most recently, The Corona Verses. He also wrote an opinion piece over the summer for The Hill titled America's Epidemic of Rage. At the time, he was connecting to us from Australia. And last but not least, Craig Helmstetter leads the American Public Media Research Lab, which conducts the Mood of the Nation survey, along with other demographic analyses. He also holds a PhD in sociology. Because our program today is on tape, we're not taking calls live, but let us know what you thought. Email talk@21stshow.org. We'd love to know, do you feel like America is experiencing a rage epidemic? How have you seen these statistics in your real life? And do you agree with the Mood of the Nation survey that the mood of America is angry? talk@21stshow.org. All right, here now is our conversation on America's anger issues. All right, Craig, let's start. Tell us more about the goals of this Mood of the Nation survey.
Yeah, this poll is conducted periodically by the McCourtney Institute for Democracy at Pennsylvania State University. It's a part of their political science department. So it's a nonpartisan exercise. It's a scientific poll representing all American adults. And what we're doing with them there is just trying to understand what's on the minds of Americans, everything from, you know, which political candidate do you support to what policies do you support? And also, as the name of the poll implies, just what is the mood? How are people feeling about America today?
So I mentioned in the introduction that 9 in 10 Americans can identify something in the news or politics that makes them angry. What sort of things are we talking about? What is angering America?
Well, yeah, as a part of this poll, we not only ask those closed-ended sort of questions, you know, is something making you angry, or we also ask, is something making you proud? But then we ask them to talk about what those things are. And the most recent time that we included this question, the things that was about a year ago. And so at that time, you know, we were entering the presidential race. And here's a couple of examples of quotes of what people said when asked what has recently been in the news that makes you feel angry. And as you might imagine, there was a Republican respondent who said, everything that Biden and the Democrats do, that makes me angry. And as you might imagine, there was a Democrat who responded, people defending Trump's right to be on the ballot, saying that he's not an insurrectionist. That was making her mad. So there was a fair amount of anger here. You know, as you quoted, 90% just immediately could name something that made them angry. We also, you know, we asked the flip side, can you name something that makes you proud? And only about half of America could name something at that time that made them proud of what was going on. So a lot more anger than pride at the time of that survey.
Yeah, I guess that about sums up American politics right there, doesn't it?
Right.
Tim O'Leary, I'm going to bring you into the conversation. You wrote, again, this opinion piece for The Hill titled America's Epidemic of Rage. That was in June last year. What were you seeing that inspired you to write that?
I think it was initially inspired just by how I was feeling. I found myself concentrating on my rage more than I ever had. And it also became a literary theme for me. The whole thing started because I wrote a fictional story called Raging that's in one of my books that imagines a future where it becomes a sort of an epidemic and that people can't control and leads to all kinds of terrible circumstances. But I realized we're not far from that point. Before I had a long career in advertising and the media before I started writing. And what I recognize is that rage has just become a currency. And, you know, we are being incentivized to be enraged by the media, by our friends. In my mind, and I called it the epidemic of rage. It's become this epidemic that is really, really harmful for us, and we don't really quite know why it's happening.
Dr. Mock, I want to bring you into the conversation. After hearing about Tim's experience and the data from Craig, I wonder what you've seen in your practice. Have you seen this rage or anger over politics coming up with your patients?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I think the thing that hasn't changed very much, I might see people coming in dealing with anger or being upset with, say, a friend or a family member not following through with something, and their anger can show that, say, a boundary has been crossed. In some ways, that hasn't changed. But the big change I've seen is since about 2016, prior to that, I had never had people coming in saying that they were coming in because of politics, seeking therapy. And since 2016, I think that is often a reason people will cite that they're upset, they feel powerless, they feel sad, scared, but also angry about politics and sort of the state of the world.
All right, let me take a moment to remind listeners we're talking about the mood of the nation, which, according to the most recent survey from American Public Media and the McCourtney Institute for Democracy, is angry. And we're talking about that with Dr. Teresa Mock, who's a clinical psychologist who's been providing therapy to patients for more than 30 years. Tim O'Leary is the author of several fiction books, including most recently The Corona Verses. He also wrote an opinion piece over the summer for The Hill titled America's Epidemic of Rage. And joining us from St. Paul, Minnesota, is Craig Helmstetter, who leads American Public Media's research lab, which conducts the Mood of the Nation survey. We heard from some of you in our texting group. Christopher in Brimfield said, during the first time Trump was president, I was on social media and found my stress levels were taking a toll on me. When I got off social media, my anxiety was so much better. Being connected with others all the time was exhausting for many reasons. Social media hasn't been a positive thing for society. We can come back to that a little later in the conversation. I do want to talk about how that affects our rage. But
Craig, let's talk about a different survey from your research lab, which found that 1 in 5 Americans agree with a statement indicating that the nation's political and social institutions should be allowed to burn. Which demographic groups were most likely to agree with that statement?
Yeah, this was a sort of non-traditional question that we had in a more recent survey. This one was fielded in September, just before the election, and we asked people to say whether they agreed or disagreed with this statement. When I think about our political and social institutions, I cannot help thinking, just let them all burn. And as you just said, you know, 1 in 5 Americans agreed with that statement. It's a pretty extreme statement in a lot of ways that we want to agree with the idea that political and social institutions should be allowed to burn. But somewhat surprisingly, you know, going into this, as Tim was mentioning, you know, some politicians and some might contend, especially the Trump campaign, was really playing on fear as a theme and anger as a theme in the campaign. So you might go into this and guess. In fact, it was my hypothesis that Republicans would have had higher anger than Democrats. But actually, when we looked at the results, it was very similar, that 1 in 5 Democrats and 1 in 5 Republicans both agreed with that statement that things should be burned to the ground. Where we really saw a difference was by generation. And there, sort of interestingly, Generation Z, the younger folks age 18 to 27, about a third of those agreed with the statement, and it was way down to only 13% among the baby boom generation. So the younger generations were much more in favor of this sort of drastic social change.
Tim, what do you think is fueling this anger?
I think we have an incentive system that promotes it. And so I have seen politicians admit to the fact that the more they can get people angry, the more donations they get, the more support they get. There used to be this years ago, this thing the media would say, if it bleeds, it leads, and they'd want to put the worst thing up. Now, so much of the media, that's really what they're about. They want to put something horrible that gets you angry, to get you to click through. And I think there's just a lack of truth. And so if you have an option between making a false or even slightly false statement that enrages people and gets them activated, there's also been something I've seen interesting in the person that wrote in about getting off of social media. My wife decided at the end of the last campaign that she was going to kind of divorce herself from the progressive media, that she, because she was so disappointed over the election. Well, she started to get pressure from her friends because she was disassociating, that was somehow damaging the club, the Klan. And so I think the rage feeds upon it herself. I think we all have that experience where if we get around like-minded people and we start talking about something that upsets us, that you can feel the rage level just increase. And it's not healthy. And I think a lot of people try to calm it down and pull it back. But as long as we have a media incentivized to make us angry, it's going to be a problem.
Let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Alita is calling from Normal. Alita, thank you for calling in.
Hi. I have been watching what's been going on since Trump took office, and of course, a lot longer than that, too. But the idea that our democratic institutions and the things that our legislative body is supposed to do, they're being ignored, our mores are being ignored, things like that. Truth, actual facts are being ignored. So in order to just accelerate to some kind of a change, now what I've decided is see the anger and frustrated and worried about things that are real. And people
Your phone's breaking up there, Alita. Let me see if I can, if I think I heard what you're saying is you're going to focus and limit your anger to things that are real and things that aren't real. How do you decide what's real, what's worth getting angry about?
Well, I think empirical, proven things. I mean, you can't just lob a grenade of an accusation out there and then just say, well, it doesn't matter if the facts support it, you know, like the whole accusation against Haitians eating cats and dogs, that wasn't even factual, and it caused all kinds of problems for the population in Ohio. And yet J.D. Vance was like, oh, that's okay, it's the principle of the thing. Well, it's very unprincipled. So I get upset when facts are just demoted to opinion status. That, to me, is the difference between the people around and the people that I feel afraid and upset with.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Alita, and sharing your perspective. A reminder to listeners that our program is on tape today, so that call you just heard was part of our original broadcast back in February. We were talking about America's anger epidemic. There was a survey that came out last year, found basically 9 in 10 Americans can name a recent news event or something about our country's politics that made them mad. My guests for this conversation were Craig Helmstetter, who leads the American Public Media Research Lab, which conducted that survey, Tim O'Leary, author of several fiction books, including Dick Cheney Shot Me in the Face, Men Behaving Badly, and most recently, The Corona Verses. He also had an opinion piece last summer in The Hill titled America's Epidemic of Rage. And Dr. Teresa Mock, a clinical psychologist providing therapy to patients in Urbana, Illinois for more than 30 years. Our voicemail line is 217-300-2121 if you want to let us know what you thought about this conversation, which will continue after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to our conversation on America's anger epidemic. 9 in 10 of our fellow Americans in a survey last year said they could name a recent news or political event that made them angry. The survey was done by Craig Helmstetter and his team at American Public Media Research Lab, where he leads and conducts the Mood of the Nation survey, as well as others. My other guests were Tim O'Leary, the author of several fiction books. He also had an opinion piece last year in The Hill called America's Epidemic of Rage. And finally, Dr. Teresa Mock, a clinical psychologist providing therapy to patients for more than 30 years in Urbana. We are on tape today, so we're not taking calls live, but you can let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Dr. Mock, I've seen Inside Out, so I know it's not a good idea to, lock up some of your emotions and not give them their due time, but you also don't want to let them run the show all the time. Talk about what anger, what is the utility of anger in the human, human development, human emotional experience?
Yeah, I think that's a good point, and it's an excellent movie, too, about feelings. So I think that people can realize anger is a natural, it's a universal emotion, and it can signal when something isn't right. And that could be a personal boundary that's being crossed or a perceived injustice. And sort of evolutionarily, I think it's come about as a part of our fight or flight response, and it can prepare us to face or escape threats. And often what people will notice is kind of the physical response. They can feel an arousal of their sympathetic nervous system, heart rate goes up, muscles get tense, they can have a surge of adrenaline. And again, that can all be useful sort of in the moment to kind of alert ourselves that something's not right or mobilize energy, but it can be overwhelming if anger isn't kind of managed properly.
Craig, according to your survey data, does anger actually encourage people to be constructively involved in politics, to take action?
So far we don't have data that speaks exactly directly to that, but in this poll, for example, of asking people whether they were proud or angry, the folks who were most angry in that poll were actually older adults, and so baby boomers, and their political involvement in terms of voting is much higher than younger folks in the population. So that would be one suggestion that anger can, you know, be a motivator, and perhaps, you know, if you're engaged with politics, if you're paying attention, maybe that leads you to be angry as well. You know, that famous saying: if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. So it can be a motivator. In another way, this most recent poll that talked about I can't help just thinking that we should let all social and political institutions burn. You know, that poll in some ways showed a flip side that the younger generations were more angry, with one third agreeing with that statement. And one of the big things that came out around that was that people who had engaged in protests were very likely to agree with that statement, that they would like things to be allowed to burn. And of course, the biggest protest movement around the time of that survey was the protests against Israel's war in Gaza, and that was a youth-led protest movement. And so in that way, there was some anger connected with some political engagement there. So I guess, just as Dr. Mock is talking about, when your emotions are up, perhaps it can lead you to be paralyzed in some other areas of life, but it also can lead you to become engaged and want to do something about it.
Let's go back to the phones, 800-222-9455. Carol is calling from Champaign. Carol, thank you for calling in.
Hi. I am wondering if the epidemic has been misdiagnosed as anger, when really it's our inability to curb our emotions. I mean, anger, as a retired therapist myself, I was taught that anger is a normal human emotion. And we're taught in grade school, kindergarten, how to curb our emotions so that our emotions don't get the better of us. And as a follower of Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, the teachings of Jesus Christ, I'm taught, be angry, but sin not.
Interesting. Thank you so much for sharing that, Carol. I appreciate that. Teresa Mock, what do you think of that?
I think that certainly makes sense. And sometimes I'll talk with people, I'm thinking at an individual level, about anger, and they will say sometimes they're not even aware of being angry until things blow up, and then they're really aggressive towards someone. And sort of at an individual level, kind of working with people to say, how do we increase their own emotional awareness of what they're feeling, that by the time they feel angry enough to blow up, probably lots of strategies that might help decrease their anger won't work as well. So how can they be more aware if they're irritated, say, or starting to get angry, even putting it on a scale? If 10 is feeling like they're going to blow up at someone, how can they recognize when they're at a 6 or a 4 or a 2? Because different strategies might work if they're just more aware of what they're feeling.
Tim O'Leary, I wonder if this takes me, something that Carol said, our caller there, about people acting on their anger. If there is, this goes back to that idea of social media that you were talking about earlier. There's more of an incentive to be performative with one's anger nowadays, perhaps, whereas when you were angry and shouting at the television alone, you know, maybe there was a limited utility to that. I don't know if you see a connection there.
I think that the caller made a good point, but the problem is that we have lost respect for civility and the power that it can have. And so you played a clip earlier of you know, the debacle on the Senate floor. We are constantly surrounded by people that want us angry, and we have very few, you know, we don't have any Martin Luther Kings out there now that would give us the right kind of the right way to look at things. And so, You know, I think until we get public officials and our politicians that give us good examples of how we should conduct ourselves, as opposed to what they're doing now. You know, I'm sure, like everybody, I am overrun with texts every day from political organizations, and often the headline is, "Are you as angry as I am? If you're angry, you need to do this," as opposed to being more solution-based. The anger issue is, I almost look at the media, some segments of the media, as drug dealers. And if they were pushing another kind of drug, we would take some kind of action. And I have no idea what kind of action you could take. But if you have good leaders that are showing us a better way through their self-control, and if we can start to get more to the truth, as opposed to all these artificial reasons to get mad, we would be in such better shape.
And is this something that has, Craig, maybe I'll put this to you. Has this changed over time? I'm thinking of the movie Network, right? 1976, I'm mad as heck, and I'm not going to take it anymore. That certainly
did they say
after...
heck? Did they say heck,
well,
Brian?
this is public radio. We're keeping
yes.
it into it.
Right.
You know,
yes.
And that came after a decade of tremendous upheaval and protests and fighting in the streets and Abby Hoffman and all the rest. Yeah. How new is this?
Well, I was going to make the observation, you know, that we might have a tendency to feel like this is worse than it's ever been. But actually, it has not, according to our data, it has not changed very dramatically at all. We've been fielding this question about anger and pride for about 10 years now. And that trend line has really stayed about the same. About half of Americans throughout that period have in fact said that they are not only angry, but that they're extremely angry. So I was going to make this assertion that, you know, even though it feels like we are in a period of heightened anger right now, perhaps things have not changed. I was very curious, though. One of the first things that Dr. Mock said was that she noticed a change in her practice around 2016, which is really when we started fielding this question. So maybe there has been some change, some heightening in anger, specifically related to political things that predates, you know, our survey. But I will say that you know, right now, we all need to be very careful about what bubbles we live within, because for some of us, this current period might feel very angering. And for another part of the population, you know, this period might inspire a lot of pride. And so we really just have to, you know, think about not only what the world looks like for us, but what it looks like for the broad population. And of course, I guess I'm ending up making an argument for doing things like public opinion polls, where you are allowed to get outside your bubble and see what the broad public is thinking.
Well, this is the thing. If we do a conversation tomorrow and we, you know, have somebody who comes on and says Elon Musk is, you know, single-handedly destroying aspects of our government, you know, it seems from your survey that one in five people is going to say good, because they want to see it burn, right?
Right, right. That's delivering on that hope for them. That's right.
Yeah. Wow. I want to share another text message we got from Katie, who said, "The lack of empathy and ignorance, coupled with zero fact-checking on media channels, just makes me so angry." Katie said, thank you for sharing that, Katie. Tim, talk about that. You've mentioned the media a number of times here, and we just heard Craig talk about sort of information bubbles. Do you see those sort of channels? I mean, on the one hand, people say that they're not getting what they want from the media, right? Zero fact-checking, Katie said. On the other hand, we hear constantly that people are ensconced in these media bubbles and not hearing how, you know, they're surprised when they learn that other people don't see things the way they do. How do you think about breaking through that sort of thing?
Well, that's kind of what I was referring to earlier when I talked about the situation my wife faced, in that she was in a bubble. When she drew back from the bubble, it actually inspired anger in the bubble. And I think we are all that way. When I go to my Facebook feed, everybody on my Facebook feed, we all agreed, and we don't have substantive discussions outside of that. But again, I don't know when I am reacting to truth versus fiction, and that is a very distressing thing anyway, and makes you angry. Just the act of not knowing what is really going on, and not being able to appropriately judge how angry you should be about something. If you are fed media that says this is the end of the world, it's the end of democracy, it's the end of this, what I've tried to do to kind of keep myself sane is I sometimes think about what was my father thinking in 1940? What was the world like then? And is it actually worse now? And I don't know, but the point is, we have all had our trials and tribulations, and we've managed to come out of them. If you take a defeatist perspective, and the media, a lot of the media would like you to have that perspective to keep you tuned in, then it just feels hopeless. And I think you need to be able to dig through and find the hope.
Dig through and find the hope. Dr. Mock, how about that? What do you advise people in terms of media consumption in this day and age?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what everyone else has said. I think sometimes I'll talk to people and find out that they're on social media. It can be really easy to get sucked in. And as we know, it's sort of this dramatic or sometimes angry, polarizing content is what gets views. And so even talking with people about putting their phone down, trying to develop habits of interacting more with people just in their real life, not just being online all the time, and acknowledging some of how hard that is. And also talking with people sometimes about, even with everything going on, are there ways that they can kind of cultivate or think about anything good going on or anything positive in their life to try to make even a small dent in maybe the anger or the fear, frustration that they're feeling.
Tim O'Leary, I want to come back to you because you wrote a humorous piece about Donald Trump becoming president long before he did. I think I also read a piece from you. I think it was you about infomercials and the relationship to Trump's pitch to,
right,
to voters.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Talk about that. What you see there that may be going over some of our heads who don't have that connection to the industry.
Well, the piece you're referring to, early in my career, I had a brush with the infomercial industry, and if you know how it works, you completely understand. And the point of that piece was you completely understand Donald Trump, and you completely understand how he works, how he operates, and you know, that's the point of the piece was that's not a real stable political situation, and there is a marketing backbone that we are all surrounded by constantly, and it's working on us, but we don't actually know, because when it's going well for the marketer, it's you can't see it. And so when you come from that background and you see that going on, it's very distressing. It's one thing to sell somebody an ab roller that doesn't work and they don't need. It's another thing to sell them on a political philosophy that was just developed as the result of a marketing idea. And in order to sell us that, it used to be the promise of marketing was this is going to make you happier, better. There's a way it's done. I'm going to hook you. I'm going to tell you about some miraculous thing you need. I'm going to convince you that it's going to work, and then you're going to buy it. What has happened now is that the marketing message is things are terrible and only I can change this for you. And so I need you to give me money. And yeah, it's a negative way to handle it.
Yeah. All right. We need to take another break. We will finish our conversation when we return. All the calls you're hearing today are on tape. Again, we originally aired this program back in the wintertime, but you can let us know what you thought by leaving a voicemail anytime, day or night. 217-300-2121 is the number. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to our conversation about rage and anger in America. There was a survey called Mood of the Nation. It's from American Public Media and the McCourtney Institute of Democracy, and it found that 9 in 10 Americans say a recent news event or something about our country's politics made them mad. Joining us for this conversation was Craig Helmstetter, a PhD sociologist who leads American Public Media's research lab and conducts that survey. Dr. Teresa Mock, a clinical psychologist for more than 30 years in Urbana, Illinois. And Tim O'Leary, author of several fiction books, including most recently The Corona Verses. He also had an opinion piece last summer in The Hill titled America's Epidemic of Rage. We're on tape today, so no calls, but let us know what you thought. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. Dr. Mock, let's talk about the pandemic. Social isolation, anxiety, a lot of anger about how elected officials were or were not handling things. Talk about the role the pandemic has played in our national anger.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up. I think that was the other thing. I think sometimes anger, what I'll talk about with people is even the relationship of anger to depression or feeling powerless, that oftentimes I think people might feel angry in situations where they don't feel a lot of power. And I'm thinking about how COVID sort of worldwide really exacerbated that feeling for people of feeling powerless, having this kind of impotent frustration, anger that was really diffuse. So I think in lots of ways it kind of magnified what people may already have been feeling.
Let's go to the phones. Barb is calling from Chicago on line one. Barb, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, as a therapist, what I've learned is that most anger is rooted in fear or hurt. We're certainly not taught how to deal with those vulnerable type of feelings and try to empower ourselves with anger. Of course, the media and politicians exploit this. Our leaders could also exploit our shared compassion and empathy that you see when there's catastrophes and people reach out to each other, but that's not in their interest to, that's not the way this administration is getting what they want.
Thank you for calling in, Barb. Appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Tim, you wrote a book called Corona Verses, which is part short story collection, part novel related to the pandemic. Talk about how you saw the pandemic, interrelating with our anger epidemic.
Yeah, the genesis of the book was I was working on another novel, and when the pandemic started, I thought I have to document this because it's a once in a multi-generation thing to have happen. And so the stories all revolve around a small town and what happens there. But there is, I realized in preparing for this, there is a theme of rage within there, because especially in one of the stories, a family is sort of broken apart by their political differences, and that leads to increased anger and finally really blows apart. But I think one of the worst aspects is if all of a sudden you take what is unfortunately these days a very limited social life, and now you are quarantined and you're just watching, you're doom scrolling your phone and watching these kinds of things. It just really exacerbates the situation. One of the things I've noticed, especially among my younger friends, is that we used to spend a lot of time communicating, and we'd get together and we'd talk on the phone. And as that has been replaced with sort of digital friendships, you do sort of lose your empathy and your ability to communicate, and And I think in some ways, your ability to kind of think through situations and take a humanistic approach to it, because it's everything is centered differently. And I think that the COVID really exacerbated that situation. And I don't think we've come out of it. I think that would be part of the reason that we continue to kind of fall into this epidemic of rage.
That's such an interesting point. I mean, we were already bowling alone, to use Robert Putnam's phrase, before the pandemic, right? And so maybe people have lost that ability to have to deal with people who don't share all their views all the time in the real world, in the bowling league, in the Elks Club, whatever it is.
Brian, if I could jump in, something Tim and Dr. Mock were just talking about really sparked a connection that I didn't have actually before this call. And that is that, you know, we, as you mentioned, the APM Research Labs field a number of surveys, and we recently surveyed Minnesotans in partnership with our colleagues at Minnesota Public Radio on loneliness. And it turned out in that poll that the rates of loneliness were much higher among younger adults. Again, this Generation Z, which among adults includes 18 to 27-year-olds, the rates who said frequently lonely were twice as high among younger adults than among any other age group, 20% of that population. And then, you know, it was a different survey, but then looking back to this Mood of the Nation survey, the national survey that we do with McCourtney Institute, we see that, you know, much higher proportions of those in that younger generation are willing to agree with this statement that when I think about political and social institutions, we should just let them all burn. And so, yeah, in terms of especially what Dr. Mock said about if you're feeling anxious, lonely, that's just one step away from feeling angry and wanting to take some drastic social action here. So, yeah, just an interesting connection on how those emotions might be playing out in America today.
Craig, I know that the data can be limiting in this way, but do you have any sense of why people in Gen Z feel more lonely, more isolated?
Really, that was a very quick survey that just kind of tapped that top line. So we didn't get, unfortunately, didn't get a lot of get to go much deeper. One thing, though, that we were able to ask in that survey is whether you're feeling safe in your community. And maybe not surprisingly, people who were feeling unsafe in their community also were feeling lonely. So, you know, it's harder to make connections, perhaps, if you're just not feeling safe. So that's and that, too, was a little bit more common among younger Minnesotans and certain populations of color there. So that's just at least one clue as to why those younger populations are feeling lonely.
Dr. Mock, do you have a hypothesis about that? I mean, we've certainly heard, you know, social media, TikTok, smartphones, take your pick.
Yeah, I would agree with what the other panelists have said and what the callers have said. I think increasingly, just as society is more online, and I'm old enough to remember when, if you wanted to talk to a friend after school, you had to go to the family phone, which was in the living room, and it was a dial, and you had to make some kind of effort. And now it strikes me about how often people I might even see in my practice, even college age kids, they'll talk about having these friendships, and I'll ask about, did they hang out? And it'll turn out it's all online. And I think that can have the effect of starting to sort of silo people, or they're around people who, of course, can give them a sense of safety, which is really important. But it's also hard to balance what may be lost if they're not socializing in person and getting together with other people.
All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-222-9455. Kathy is calling in from Muscatine, Iowa, on line two. Kathy, thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me. I have really three questions. The first question is, and I think two of them are at least for Tim mostly, you suggested that the television, the media are trying to sensationalize things, which does make people angry. And I couldn't agree more. But have you also noticed that they have a tendency to go we, they? In other words, maybe it makes them more angry. I don't know. But have you seen that there's a we, they proposition to that as well that makes it more lucrative for them?
Also, can you tell me, can anybody tell me why people are so drawn to this? They're so drawn to this rabble-rousing that seems to me to go on to at least the television media. And I forgot my last question.
That's all right, Kathy. Thank you so much. We're short on time anyway. So Tim, I'll bounce that back to you.
Well, a couple things about that. You know, in previous to the major social networking days, we would get our news without any bias. It's, here's what happened today. Walter Cronkite's going to tell you what happened, and you can form your own opinions about that. Now, because media is so layered, so if I'm watching XYZ Network, then I'm also going to listen to their podcast, and I'm going to buy the books that their people are selling, and the whole financial structure is different, and they want to put me into a clan of like-minded people and hold me within that clan and incentivize me to keep buying the things that they want me to buy, and the news will be changed according to what they want me to do. And I think that's dangerous in many, many ways. The other thing is, once you're in that clan and you're just dealing with other people that way, you lose your social tools. And I think that's one of the big problems we have now. I liked the days when I wanted to get a date that I had to go to a bar and ask a girl out, or go somewhere and meet somebody that way and develop those kinds of social tools. As we don't have these social tools anymore, and we're glued to our computer, and we're pulled into the clan that has incentivized us the most, it's a very, very limiting place to be in.
We're coming to the end of our time together. Craig, you mentioned earlier in the conversation that one of the other components of the survey was asking Americans what makes them proud. I wonder if, in the half of people, instead of 9 in 10 who could think of something that made them angry, what did make people proud? Is there any hope for, commonality or coming together in those responses?
Oh, can I end us on a strong positive note? Well, we did a code. We did ask people what makes them proud, and we coded their answers. And the most popular answer in the among those who are proud of something were just the thought about principles of democracy was the category, and people were saying just the Constitution, the fact that we have a functioning democracy, that those were things that that made them proud. And the second most popular category was people talking about specific domestic issues and policies that made them proud or hopeful. In this case, there was some people that were, there were a lot of people who were mad about, for example, immigration, but there were other people who specifically mentioned policies like immigration policy at that time under Biden that was making them proud. So, but that higher, principles of democracy, maybe that's something that that people across the aisle can all agree on to help us feel proud that at least there are some bedrock things that help keep our society together.
Okay. Well, I guess maybe people being excited about things that are, on their sort of political side of the aisle is not actually a place of hope for us. So
right.
We'll have to go through before we
are.
Out.
We will be fielding another survey. This is a time of a lot of tumult, so it will be interesting to see what the mood of the nation holds for us now. So we'll let you know when our next results come out now here in the spring.
Can you get higher than 9 and 10, 19 and 20, I guess?
Yeah, perhaps.
All right. Craig Helmstetter leads American Public Media's Research Lab, which conducts the Mood of the Nation survey. Tim O'Leary is the author of several fiction books, including most recently The Corona Versus. His opinion piece in The Hill was titled America's Epidemic of Rage. And Dr. Teresa Mock is a clinical psychologist providing therapy to patients for more than 30 years in Champaign, Urbana. Thank you all so much for being with us today on The 21st Show. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, more students in Illinois have been missing significant amounts of school since the pandemic. It's raising concerns about the education students are getting or missing out on. We'll talk about this problem of chronic absenteeism and what's being done about it tomorrow on The 21st Show, which is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.